Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Today, we're sharing an inspiring story of how one man went from serving over two decades in prison to now having redemption. So you're gonna wanna have some tissue handy.
Most poor black people end up in the system because of that.
Because of the lack of representation and because of the skin color. No father wants to see his son go to jail.
It was unconstitutional to give a juvenile a mandatory life sentence.
This story will change your entire outlook on life.
Don't tell me what God can't do, man.
I was charged with first-degree murder and found guilty of second-degree murder. And that's what brought me here, 10 gold. I come from the city of New Orleans, and I grew up in a very violent neighborhood and where most of my friends died before the age of 18. And basically, I know that I escaped death through all of that. You know, I knew if I wouldn't have came here, I'd be dead in hell somewhere. Basically, out there, I had no peace, you know, and I always was wondering when I was gonna be next to be killed, you know. And it got to a point to where I really just accepted it. You know, hey, you know, I guess this is what it's supposed to be for me, you know.
Now, before we hop into today's show, I wanna remind you of the book of the month, Goals by Zig Ziglar. Be sure to get your copy linked in the description box below. And while you're there, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe so you can be notified every single time we drop a new video. Alrighty now, let's hop into the show.
Welcome to the table, yeah, yeah. We gon' get real, we gon' get right. Oh, building up wealth, we gon' give life. Welcome to the table, wealth, yeah. Welcome to the table, build wealth, life. Welcome to the table.
Man, today's show, you guys, is probably gonna be one of the most... I'm trying to think of the proper word to describe today's show. I don't have a proper word to describe it. It's going to be heartfelt. It's going to be meaningful. I believe it's going to inspire a lot of us. I would encourage you, if you have a young man, you need to share this show. As a matter of fact, I would probably even say pause it and go get your son and get your daughter right now. Go get your boyfriend right now. I would definitely say if your son is not around, man, rewatch this with your son, young man. If you're a husband, if you're a father, you want to watch this show with your kid. a couple of months ago, I was contacted by a publisher, and it said, hey, man, this young man doesn't have a huge following, but he has a huge story that deserves a huge stage. And we think it'll be a perfect fit for your community and audience. And when I was researching and talking with my team about it, I immediately sent it to Michelle, who pretty much leads all of our guests. And she said, no, this would be a great, great, great story. And I just spent some time with him, and Michelle just spent some time with him talking about more of his story and more of his journey. And I don't really have set questions I want to ask. I just want to give this man the opportunity to share his testimony, to share his story, because I think a lot of us make mistakes and a lot of us are defined by our mistakes. But the only person who can define us is God. Our mistakes from our past don't define us, but God can use all things for his glory. And today, man, I'm super excited because we have Ronnie on the show, and Ronnie served 27 years in prison. And today he's impacting the world in a tremendous way with his story, with his testimony, and his journey. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome to the table for the first time, and definitely not the last time. The next time, we got to get him here in person. is my dear friend, Ronnie. What's going on, Ronnie?
Hey, man, I'm blessed, man. Very grateful to be here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. I want to say thank you for creating this time for you to come on and to share your story, share your testimony of what you've been through. You guys, Ronnie is the author of a new book called 27 Summers, and we're going to put the link of his book in today's show notes, but I really want to just straight up dive into the book. It's 27 Summers, one man's journey from the streets to a life sentence in prison to freedom in Christ. And you guys know how we roll over here. We are the E3 community, and we're talking about expanding in three main areas in the year 2024: abundance, wellness, and what? Freedom. And this man's book is talking about, hey, how he went from the streets to prison. Clearly, he didn't serve life because he's on with us right now, to now freedom in Christ. Ryan, I want to start off and just talk about, I want to go straight in. I want to go straight into your story and your journey. This book is a memoir of your life. Yes, and sir. I want to go back to the very, very beginning. Because how old are you now, Ronnie, if you mind me asking?
I'm 48.
48 years old, man. Yes. 8 years, 9 years older than me. And I was reading over your notes, and it showed that your first time you saw someone killed in front of you, you were 12 years old. Talk to us a little bit about your childhood and what you grew up in, and then we'll go from there.
And so I grew up in a very, in New Orleans, Louisiana, a very poverty-stricken area. And I can remember growing up, you know, there was always some type of altercation going on in the streets. But I think it really got worse in the late 1980s. I can remember when I moved from one area, we moved from the 7th Ward. New Orleans is separated in different wards to the 8th Ward. And very nice neighborhood. I can remember being on a porch feeding the birds. And something happened in the late 1980s. The crack epidemic completely destroyed our neighborhood. And so with drugs, follows it, there's a lot of violence. And so it was very common for me to hear gunshots and to hear sirens. Now, I was very accustomed to that. In fact, that became normal to me until I can remember when I went by my dad in Florida and I didn't hear that. I felt uncomfortable because I didn't hear that. Mm. And so the abnormal became normal to me. And so here it is, this crack epidemic and this violence taking place. And also during that period, my dad was making a transition from Jacksonville, Florida, from New Orleans to Jacksonville, Florida. And I was very disappointed in that. He left. Of course, this teenager trying to wrap his mind around his dad leaving.
Yeah.
I come from a neighborhood. I got friends where they don't even have dad.
Wow.
And so now it's like, okay, this how they feel, you know? And so my dad and I was very close. He was everything to me. And now he's leaving. And I can see now for some good reason, I understand now, but I couldn't understand that then. I was very angry. I was upset. And I was hurt. I felt abandoned. And so just during a period of time where I really needed a man to navigate me through what was happening in my neighborhood and really help me. And so there was none there. And so the streets began to fall to me.
Mm.
The drug dealers, I began to look up to her in the spot. Okay, that's what I want to be. You know, I saw the cars, the rims, the sound in the cars, the gold chains, the gold teeth, and the females that kind of flocked to them. I said, okay, that's what I want to be. And so before you know it, start selling drugs, me and a couple of my friends, and was doing all sorts of things with the street offered. And consequently, that led me into jail for murder at the age of 16. And so I gets into an altercation with a guy, and me and a couple of my friends jump him. And the next time he sees me, it's Christmas Day on Canal Street, very busy area in downtown New Orleans. And we're pretty much outnumbered. It's like two or three of us, and there's about six or seven of them. And so they saw an opportunity there. And I always carried a gun everywhere I went. And one of the guys who we had the altercation with, he knew that. And so one thing led to another. Shots fired. Two people ended up in a pool of blood, and I'm standing over them with a gun. And so a 14-year-old had died, and also an 18-year-old, he survived, the one who I actually had the altercation with. And so that leads me into the juvenile bureau, which I had been there two or three times, you know, and prior to that, and my mother come sign me out, and I was waiting on my mom to come sign me out. She couldn't sign me out of that. And so after a few court appearances in the juvenile court, they decided to charge me as an adult. And I was transferred to the adult prison and rebooked on charges of first degree murder. And so now I am facing the death penalty. And I'm really blown away. I was very optimistic. I'm thinking, okay, you know, yeah, this won't last long. I'll be home soon. And everything was like really fun and games to me. Until the trial, everything got real. All these legal terms passed around, and here it is. The jury is deliberating, and of course, I had a public. I'm gonna say it in one of my friends, Pastor Dunks, his terminology. I had a public pretender. He pretended to defend me. And so here it is. I'm in the holding tank. I can still hear the cell door slam, wow, and the key turn, and I can still hear the guard's footsteps, you know, fading away. And I'm all alone in the holding tank while the jury is deliberating. And so the weight of everything came down on me in that cell. And I began to realize, okay, there's 12 people that don't really know me, that's making the decision on whether I live or die. And I was like, wow, man, I don't want to die. And so right after that, I began to hear, I believe it was God using my mother's voice, and I can hear her saying, baby, if you ever in trouble that I can't get you out of, you call on Jesus. And so right there, in that cell, I got on my knees. I was crying, and I called out to him. And I had a very simple prayer. A lot of people say, you don't make deals with God. I made a deal with him. That was my prayer. I said, God, I said, Lord, if you don't let them kill me, I promise you, I'll serve you the rest of my life.
Wow.
And for the first time in my life, I experienced the peace of God. That was a peace that came over me. I didn't know what it was then. I can look back and, you know, identify with it. But there was this calmness, this inward resolve that I was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And man, and so they come back out. So the jury came out with a guilty verdict of the lesser offense, the responsive verdict, which was second degree murder. And it carried a mandatory life sentence without benefits of parole or probation. So in layman's terms, you die in prison, you know, and so you never get out. And so they sentenced me to that. And so, but I like to tell a story like this. While in that holding tank, man, I received two life sentences, you know, The state was giving me a life with no benefits, but God was giving me a life sentence with so many benefits in it. In his word, he encouraged you not to forget them.
Yeah.
You know? And so, man, so here it is. I'm on this journey. I was very optimistic then. I still felt like, man, soon I'll go home, man. I always had an inner resolve that I was not going to die in prison, even when everybody else around me was dying in prison. Men were growing old, you know. And so I find myself on this pad, on this long snake road right off of 61 on Tunica Hill, headed to Angola. It's 20-mile snake road. Mm. And, man, I'm like, oh, it was a surreal moment. Felt like I was dreaming. But I was thinking about, I never forget on that road, I was thinking about how, you know, how Angola is, the stories I heard about them. You know,
Angola was the prison that you were going to.
Yes, the penitentiary, Louisiana.
But Angola with the prison.
Right. It's Louisiana State Penitentiary. It was once a plantation where they brought slaves from Angola to that area and enslaved them, and so they named the area Angola to make them feel like they were at home. Mm. And so that's where I'm headed to, this this big plantation. It's 18,000 acres.
Yeah.
Surrounded by the Mississippi River. On either side, and so here it is. I'm thinking about this place labeled as the bloodiest prison in the nation. You know, it was very violent, and one of the things that they preyed upon was the young. And so here I am. I'm 18 by this time, headed to Angola. Literally, I was 5'11", 131 pounds. Wow. Didn't have a string of hair in my face. Wow. Wasn't even growing hair in my face then. And I'm headed to Angola. And I made a decision on that bus. I said, man, because I know they preyed up on the young with raping them and making them be, you know, their little slaves and doing things. So I made a decision on the bus that I'm going in this gate of man, and I'm going to come out this gate, whether in a box or walking, but I'll be a man, you know. And so that was my mindset. So I went with that chip on my shoulder, you know, and dealing with guys. It just amazingly, you know, I used to always, at one time I thought, because I figured I was so bad and I was a stand-up guy, nobody would go mess with me and all that there. But I can look back and see, man, God was protecting me. Man, listen. He was orchestrating a plan. Wow. He had a plan that he was putting together that I had no idea.
Yeah. What's going on, everyone? It's your boy AO here, and I'm super excited to share some incredible news with you. On January 22nd through the 26th, we're launching a transformative movement called Pray FYI, short for Pray for Your Increase. We're believing 2024 will be the year we eliminate debt and build wealth. So real quick, I want to give you a sneak peek into what's happening January 22nd through the 26th. I want to encourage you to join myself and thousands of others in this week of prayer as we're diving into a series of powerful sessions, each focusing on a key aspect of financial well-being. Join this movement by visiting prayfyi.com. You see, day one, we're focusing on debt reduction and financial stress. We'll be praying for wisdom to identify and eliminate unnecessary expenses, making room for your financial growth and stability. On day two, it's all about increase in salaries and business income. We'll come together and pray for guidance in pursuing career opportunities, promotions, and the skills needed to boost our income. Day three is all about increase in wealth and investment opportunities. Let's pray for discernment and wisdom. We need this in making sound financial decisions that lead to long-term generational prosperity. On day four, we're tackling boosting multiple streams of income. Together, we'll pray for creativity and opportunities to diversify our income streams, creating financial abundance. And finally, on day five, enhancing legacy. Let's pray for discernment and wisdom in making some sound financial decisions that lead to long-term prosperity. I want to personally invite you to join me on this journey of financial and spiritual growth. Listen, I can't wait to see you there. Visit PrayFYI.com to get started. I'll see you soon.
And so I was placed around some guys, man, who was willing to help me and not hurt me.
Wow.
I'm talking about some of the greatest men of God, some of the most intelligent men, man, that you can ever meet was right there waiting on me.
You know, I wanna pause right there because I have like so many notes that I really want to just ask you on, because I think your story, I'm trying not to get as emotional, because you said something that I believe is so true. And I really want to get your thoughts on this now that you're out, now that you're serving God and you're serving people and you're helping people. You said something that I want to go back to, that your father left you and he left you for good reasons now that you're older and you understand mm-hmm. why he left. But then you said after that, when your father left you, the streets raised you. Recently, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you just had a newborn, right? A three-year-old baby. Is it a son or is it a daughter?
I have a son. He's 3 years old. He'll be four in January.
Four. So now that you have a son in your life, mm-hmm. and congratulations, man. I mean, your story is just amazing. Yeah. Why do you think it is important? Because we have a lot of men watching this show right now. We have mm-hmm. a lot of ladies watching this show as well, single mothers watching this show. And I want to say this respectfully, that are somewhat blocking their fathers, their sons or daughters' fathers from being in their life. Let me ask you this question. If your father was still in your life actively, do you think you would have turned out the way that you did at that young age? Like, do you think the importance of having a father in someone's life is very important?
It's extremely important. And I think things would have been different if he was present, because he was a real father. You know, he was very intentional in his fathering. You know, he wasn't just there. You know, one of the worst things is to have a father that's there, but he's absent. Mm. You know, that's even worse than not even having a father at all.
Yeah, you know.
And so when he was on the scene, he was always there. And so it would have definitely helped me a lot, because I'm moving into that young man stage and I needed to know how to be a man. Mm. And it's difficult for a woman to teach you that. She's never been a man, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so that would have made a great difference. And it's very important. I spend a lot of time, if you look on my social media page, I spend a lot of time with my son, and I post things for that and just ministering to people and showing them, man, as a father, you don't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
But you have to be present.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so much more. We're accustomed to thinking if we just take care of our kids, if we just buy them this and buy them that, they're okay. But what they really need is us rather than things, you know. And man, and so that's very important. Very important.
What is when you think about that time when unfortunately you're sitting over these bodies, I'm curious, I think you said you was, what, 18, 17, 18?
I was 16 at the time of the crime. By the time I get to Angola, I was 18.
Okay. 16 at the time of the crime. What was going through your head, I'm curious? Like, at that time, you're seeing these bodies, you're in this altercation.
Mm-hmm.
When it hit you that this just went down, mm-hmm. what was going through your head at that time? I'm curious.
Well, at that moment, I felt I really felt threatened. I really felt like, man, I did what I needed to do, and I just wanted to get away from that place. And so it actually happened. They tried to really snatch me off of the public bus. I was on the front of the bus. They tried to snatch me. They tore my jacket. I pulled up, and that's where I shot from the first step of the bus.
Yeah.
And then stepped over off the bus, and then actually stood over one and emptied the gun. But that one I stood over, he actually lived.
Wow.
The mindset that I had just growing up in that environment, that I had to survive.
Yeah.
You know, and so it placed you in it. Then I had a starter jacket on. A lot of people were getting robbed and killed for starter jackets.
I remember them days, man. Yeah.
Yeah. And so to think that, you know, instead of having a rational thought that, okay, just don't wear starter jackets, you know, you think to wear a starter jacket and arm myself in case somebody comes. And so so that's what my mindset was.
When I think about that time, because what year was that?
That was 1991.
91. Okay, 91. 91. So would you say that there were current circumstances that led to the involvement in that led to your conviction? Like, 16, you committed that crime, but you wasn't convicted until 18.
Right. To 17. I was convicted at 17. I went to prison at 18.
18. So they can still charge you as an adult at 17 years old?
Yes. And so it starts from the time that you commit the offense.
Okay.
That's where, whatever age it is right there, that's where it starts at. And so they can start all the way up to the age of 15. Wow. So a 15-year-old can actually go to the penitentiary.
What?
Yes. And so that's what I was saying. You know, and so it was, and so a lot of guys, a lot of kids get into things and very ignorant of the law.
Facts.
Not knowing that this could happen to you.
Facts.
You know, and I tell a lot of kids when I talk to them, you know, 15, 16, did you know you can go to Angola? They were like, what? No, I can't go to. Yes, you could, you know. And so they can charge you as an adult. And a lot of times, if it's a white person, they won't charge them as adults.
Mm.
They charge them as juveniles.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
But if you're black and you don't have that type of representation, any type of lawyer, you know, to really help navigate you and fight for you, yeah, and so Most poor black people end up in the system because of that, you know.
Because of the lack of representation and because of the skin color.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
definitely.
I 100% agree with that because I've heard so many people say, I had a public pretender, but that pretender did, that defender pretended to care, but didn't care because of one skin color and a lack of resources.
Right, right. The only time I had even saw my lawyer was at the trial. That's the first time I see him.
He never came by to fight at all.
Never came to see me, never, you know. So every time, and so my court date was set back on, let me say this, every time I went to court, that's the time I saw him. I never had any time with him outside of that.
Yo, what's going on, fam? Are you ready to make a big career move here by the end of this year? Why not pivot into the flourishing tech industry with the Bethel School of Technology, recognized globally as the sole Christian online tech bootcamp? You see, with African Americans constituting a mere 7.9% of the U.S. tech workforce, I believe it's time to narrow this display and unlock opportunities for everyone in this thriving sector. BethelTech is steadfast in its mission to make tech careers accessible, rewarding, and economically advantageous for all individuals. Their comprehensive 9-month program is designed to equip you with the necessary skills to propel you into your technology career and move forward at a high speed. You see, recent reports from Indeed suggest that software developers in the U.S. command an average annual salary of approximately about $103,000. This is well above the national average of $48,000. You see, diversify your tech education by choosing from their specialized programs like cybersecurity and UI/UX design. With BethelTech, you're not just kickstarting a career. You're igniting a passion with a purpose. I want you to say goodbye to the prospects of crippling student loan debts and instead invest a mere 9 months to transform your next decade of your professional journey. Step into your potential with BethelTech and turn your career aspirations into reality. To begin, I want you to go to anthonyoneal.com/Bethel or click the link in today's show notes. Again, that is anthonyoneal.com/Bethel. Don't wait another moment to take the first step towards a bright and promising future into a career space that can make you a millionaire. That makes me upset.
Yes.
Because if you were white, it would have been a different situation, you think?
Yes. Right. Yes, definitely.
This is why one of the things I love in your book, you talk about the importance of fathers and the importance mm-hmm. of men stepping up and being fathers, because I can only imagine what your life would have been if the father was present, because no father wants to see his son go to jail. No father right. is going to sit there and willingly know his son is out there actively in these kind of crimes and just sit there. Mm-hmm. I know growing up, I know older men who were out there doing those crimes, selling drugs, but will refuse to have their kids in it. You know, right. and so I just want right. to commend you for what you're doing now with your 3-year-old, soon to be 4-year-old son. Yeah. And thank you for that. I want to sit here and talk about your time in prison, because mm-hmm. You are 17 convicted, 18 you're going to Angola, one of the prisons that, man, my God, I just hope none of my family even has to step into, family, friends, people watching this. But when you walk in there at 18, you're greeted gratefully by men who want to help you and not hurt you. I'm curious, though, what was one of the hardest things that you had to endure throughout those 27 years in prison?
Oh, I think the hardest thing is the mental, is the complete shift of being free to being in prison, where someone is telling you with everything to do, when to get up, when to go to sleep, when to eat, when to shower, you know, and having to deal. I think the real hardest part was being away from family. You know, and so when you start out in prison, I remember a few old timers who was there a long time would say, man, and I would always go visit. He said, Lip, you, one guy used to say, Lip, and enjoy that. He said, because that stops as years goes on. You don't get as many visits, you know. And so you have to deal with the mentality that you're like, you're dead to a lot of people, a lot of family, you know. Yeah. You don't have that type of support, and it's crushing that you're in this place alone. But I think throughout my period, I still had a lot of great, through the 27 years, I had still had some great family support. They still stayed in there with me, especially immediate family. Very grateful for that. My dad used to come see me in prison.
Wow.
Which was very odd. When you go into the visiting room, it's always females, guys, mothers or girlfriends. It's never men, you know? And so, That was amazing, you know, and especially to a lot of my friends. You know,
did it?
My dad.
Did it die, though, the longer you got in there? Did your family stop coming as frequently, or did it stay consistent with your family?
It wasn't as frequent, but I was in a place where in my life where God was really doing some things with me, and I think he was cutting that cord, because I was 16 when I got incarcerated.
Yeah.
And so I depended on them.
Right.
You know, and so there was periods where, you know, I didn't get any visits, but it hurt it, but it was helping me.
Wow.
To really depend on God rather than people.
Yeah.
You know, and so he was cutting that cord, and man, God was taking care of me. And so I went to, as I'm maturing in Christ, and in his grace and in his knowledge, and I'm getting closer to him and learning to depend on him. And so it was a great experience. It was painful, but it was great, you know. Things like that, you can either get, it's only two choices. You can get better or bitter, you know. And I chose to be better.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm curious, Ronnie. You know, we talk about money here, right? Like how to make more money, how to be a good steward of your money. What in prison at 16, and you got out, what, at 43. Between those years, let's talk about money. What did you learn about? Did you learn anything about money inside of prison? Like, did you work? I mean, we hear stories. You're selling cigarettes. You're selling cheeseburgers. You know, what's real inside of Angola? Like, well, how are y'all transitioning money? How are you making money? You know, what's that? What does that look like?
And so when you first enter the system, the first job you could get, you start at, is in the field. You in the field line with guards on a horse over you, gun guards, and just basically slavery, the same picture. You're in the field, you're picking different vegetables, you're hoeing, you know, cutting grass or whatever they have on the farm for you. But the most you can make there is 4 cents an hour.
4 cents an hour?
4 cents an hour. And so that was the makeup of it.
What?
And so it was literally slavery, you know. You just made a transition. So the 13th Amendment, it speaks to this. You know, here he is, in effect, says that there's no longer slavery except you be in prison, you know. And so there it is. You have this whole thing, the gun guards. And most of the time, the gun guards that was over you, of course, was white, you know, and telling you what to do and how to do it. And so, and that was the field farmers.
What did y'all do? But, what did you do with your forces? Like, what did you do with your money in prison? I'm curious.
And so you have canteen, where you can go to store, buy different things, buy clothes. At that time, you can order clothes from places like JCPenney's and things like that.
Wow.
But it had to be blue. It had to be blue jeans.
Okay.
It had to be blue chambers shirts, or white T-shirts and white underwear. And so they had a system with that. But sooner or later, they figured out how they can gain from that. They shut the ordering down and start selling that in the canteen, you know, at enormous prices, you know. And so
wait.
There it is.
Ronnie, you making 4 cents, but they charging you $5?
Right. And so a lot of people would get money from home. You
okay.
know, family would send them money orders. You know, you didn't depend on the 4 cents to sustain you or whatever,
gotcha.
You know. And a lot of guys had different, like, trades or different talents, where they can paint or make pocketbooks or any type of leather work and some jewelry. And they were in the hobby shop. They had hobby shops. And they could sell the items, you know. I know a brother who had put his child through college from school, from prison.
Wait.
You know?
Hold on. Yeah. Right there. How was that? So he in the jail. He got a hobby. Mm-hmm. He's painting. He could turn around mm-hmm. and sell that paint to only inmates, right. or he could sell it outside as well.
Outside of it. You know, family take it home, raffle it off, or sell it. Man, you could sell to security there that works there. Yes. And also, every year, twice a year, in Angola, they have a rodeo. There's an Angola rodeo where the public can come in. And there's an arts and craft area where guys set up and sell their things to people who come in from the rodeo. And of course, the prison gets a percentage from that, their sales when they're selling on rodeo. And so.
So y'all really didn't have, there was no freedom. It was like, whatever y'all do, we're going to benefit from it because y'all in here, we own you.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The phone calls there, numbers, you know, everything. It just was a big business. And
Man, I've always wondered that. I've always wondered, like, how they survive financially. Mm-hmm. But it's good to hear that you can make money on the outside, mm-hmm. inside of prison. And I'm just so grateful that you were surrounded by the right men. Right. What's going on, family? Let's talk about something that's been buzzing in the tech world, AI safety and security. How do you feel about the rapid advancements in AI and the potential risk that it brings? Have you heard of the stories about AI being tricked? It's a real concern, but fear not, because there's a real solution, AI Red Teaming. You see, AI Red Teaming is all about stress testing. You see, AI models and deployments to prevent unauthorized access and data leaks. It's about ensuring that your AI can't be tricked into providing information beyond its intended use. And guess what? You don't have to do it alone. My friends over at HackerOne has a community of over 750 active hackers specializing in AI security testing. You see, in a recent engagement, just 18 hackers identified over 100 valid findings in just 2 weeks. That's the power of ethical hackers. Wow. So if you want to ensure the safety and security of your AI deployments, look no further. Head over to HackerOne.com and explore their AI Red Teaming services. With strategic flexibility, rapid deployment, and a hybrid talent strategy, HackerOne has everything you need to safeguard your AI. Don't let AI keep you up at night. Visit HackerOne.com today. And rest easy, knowing that your AI is in safe hands.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Who helped you out? But wait a minute. You're sitting here talking to me right now. Mm-hmm. You said that you got life.
Right.
Tell us, how did you get on parole?
And so here it is. Man, God really began to do some things in my life, began to change me from the inside out. I end up on, there was a Bible college established there, New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, where you can earn up to a bachelor's degree. In 1999, I enrolled in Bible college. In 2005, I received a bachelor's degree in Christian ministry.
And
very awesome moment in my life, very defining moment in my life, because I was so used to starting things but never finishing it, and this kind of broke that cycle, you know. And so here it is. I have a bachelor's degree, and when you're finished, you're able to have a job as an inmate minister. Your job is to go around in different areas that you're assigned to, and just minister to people and just help, just listen to them a lot of times, you know. And it got to a point where all the ministers were stacking up on each other on the 18,000 acres. They was producing this, a lot of ministers, until the warden came up with this. I believe it was a God idea to send out missionaries to other prisons. And so after graduation, you can go out as a missionary to another prison for at least 2 years and come back if you want, or you can stay there. And you go there and assist chaplains and also pastor churches. And so I actually went on a missionary journey. Yeah, this insane. But in the midst of all what was going on, the negativity of being in prison, the slavery, the modern day slavery, man, God was still in the midst doing some things. You know, he still was moving. He still was building his army behind the wall. And so, man, I went there and assisted the chaplain and pastor the church for like 3.5 years. Amazing journey there. Then I ended up back in Angola. But in 2012, I never forget, before I left the prison where I went on a missionary journey for, man, I believe God led me to do a prayer meeting, because there was a lot of guys who were stuck, who was barred out of court, that couldn't get back in the court for some type of reason. And, you know, and a lot of great guys who God was changing, but they were stuck concerning the law. And I put out a flyer up, you know, asking people to come to this prayer meeting that we was going to pray concerning freedom. Look, you could pray, bring all your paperwork, bring your transcript. We're going to put it on the altar, bring your rap sheets, you know, that they have a judge greater than the judge that we've been to, you know, that's greater, you know. Let's bring it before God. And man, amazingly, we did that. Oh man, I'm talking about, man, the presence of God came in that, because it took a lot of faith for a guy to dig up his legal work and pass the law library up and bring it to church and put it on the altar.
Wow.
That said something. And man, God honored that. Man, his presence came in there. And before you know, a lot of people went to going home, you know. And of course, that was like 2009 when that happened. It don't happen for me to 2012. You know, 2012, the United States Supreme Court came down with a ruling in Miller versus Alabama that said it was unconstitutional to give a juvenile a mandatory life sentence, that they should have some type of meaningful opportunity for freedom, that a juvenile is more likely to be rehabilitated than an adult because the frontal lobe of their brain is not fully developed. And that's the part of the brain that helps you appreciate risk and consequences. So that's why juveniles just do some asinine things, you know. And
look at God.
And so, yeah, look at God. And so it talked about the contradictory of how a juvenile was not able to go into the liquor store and purchase liquor, but they can go into the penitentiary. I never forget when I got to Angola, I saw a sign on the wall by the canteen that you could not buy cigarettes under the age of 21. Picture that. And so here it is, I'm in prison. I can't buy a cigarette because I'm too young.
But I'm in Angola.
But I could be in the penitentiary. You know.
So how did you fight and that? So when that law came out, did you hire an attorney or how did you do it?
And so when that law comes out, that deems my sentence unconstitutional and illegal. So it's a violation of my Eighth Amendment, which was cruel and unusual punishment. So I had to file into the courts. I hired a lawyer, filed into the courts to correct an illegal sentence.
Mm.
And man, here it is, man. I'm back in court. It's amazing, surreal moment. Because I always felt, believe it or not, I always felt that I wasn't going to die in Angola.
Yeah.
There was always this hope in me. And there were moments of unbelief that tried to attach itself to me. But man, I fought that by always going in the presence of God. I had developed a habit of, man, when I'm feeling some type of way, look, here, I'm going to pray. I got to get in his presence. Man, I got to go see him, you know. And man, that amazing ruler comes down. I'm going back and forth to court. I never forget, I get to court, and my lawyer was kind of distraught. He was like, man, one of the victim's family then showed up, and man, and at that time, and even now, victims, families, they carry some weight,
yeah,
a lot of weight to whether you go home or not,
yeah,
and so you can experience some opposition and you don't go home, and so he was like, man, and I noticed when I got in the courtroom, there was this lady on the front row on the other side. That just kept watching me. She was staring at me. You know, I had on handcuffs and shackles. And so I'm looking, and I know I look already intimidating with all this on me, this jewelry on me. And so I stopped looking at her, but out my peripheral, I see she still was staring. I'm like, man, I know she looks familiar. Couldn't think about it. And so when the lawyer came talking about it, he said, man, the guy's sister came. You know who the victim family is, his sister, you know. And I was like, man, no, that's not his sister. I said, that's his mother. So I remembered her. Look, out of all the people in the courtroom, I can't remember their faces, but her face burned in my mind.
Wow.
The guy who I killed, mother. I could still see her on the stand right now crying. I still see her face right now. And when God began to mature me and I developed a prayer life, I prayed for this lady more than anybody. And so at the top of my list of desires was to meet her and just ask, just apologize to her, you know, ask that she could forgive me for what I did to her family and her son. And always desired that was bigger than me going home.
Yeah.
You know, that was way greater than me going home. And so I saw opportunity. I was like, man, look, told my lawyer, look, won't you go find out if I can have a dialogue with her? I can talk to her. So he goes over there, talks to the DA, her. He comes back, says she don't want to talk. When she talks, she going to talk on the stand. That's when she going to talk. Just so happened the court date is set back to the following month. That gave me more time to pray.
Yeah.
So when we go back to when we go back to court for this hearing, she requests that she talk to me.
Wow.
Tell you, nothing but God. It's just a series of miracles in my life. Wow. You know, one after another. And so we talk, they bring her behind me. I'm handcuffed and shackled, and I have to turn around. She on the bench behind me, and I'm talking to her. And when I turn around, look in her eye, this is the most difficult conversation I have ever had in my life. And so I'm looking at this woman. She's staring at me. I'm looking in her eyes, and I took her son from her. And so her arms were folded. She just looking at me. And I broke the silence. I said, ma'am, I said, I take full responsibility for the death of your son. When I said that, she took a deep breath and she exhaled her arms. She unfolded her arms and she leaned toward me. And I say, I have absolutely no excuse. I say, I was very young. I was very impressionable. I say, very idiotic. I say, man, it's the most foolish decision I ever made in my life. You know, and I say, I just ask that somehow you can find in your heart to forgive me for what I did to you and your family. And she responded. She said, she said, you know, I don't hate you. And this is a very emotional conversation we having. I'm crying at the time of this conversation. She's crying. And she said, I don't hate you. And she said, I forgive you. Mm. And she said, I believe you deserve a second chance. And man, she also began to tell me some other things about our son. She said, when our son died, she didn't know that he had a son. And she found out he had a son. She said, and I raised him. She said, I wanted to bring him to meet you today too, but cause he forgives you. Mm. You know, I was like, wow. And I told her this. I said, ma'am, I said, well, if I get out of here, and I would love to meet him. And this was her response. She said, not if you get out, when you get out.
Wow.
And so everything about this experience and her character and her response told me that she had a relationship with God. You can't just do that. That was supernatural. Yeah. You know. And man, amazingly come back finally and ruled. And gave me parole eligibility, and everybody clapping, and you know, I never forget, everybody was going out the courtroom, and I was the last case there, and my LaNeice was the last one going through the door, and the judge said, Mr. Olivier, he said, you can visit with your family a while. And so I told him, come on back, and everybody was coming back, my family coming back, and amazingly, the lady pushed past my family to get to me first.
Mm.
Mm. I'm talking about mind blowing.
Mm.
And told me she was happy for me. She said, man, just promise me one thing. I said, anything. She said, man, don't go back out there and pick up that gun. I said, you don't have to worry about that. I said, that's done.
Yeah.
You know? And, just amazing moment in my life, man. Man, when she said, I forgive you, even though I was handcuffed and shackled, man, I felt that come off of me. Mm. It really didn't matter how the proceedings went after that. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. This was like, man, I was like, wow, you know. And I was expecting her, you know, I wouldn't mind if she would have said she hated me. I understood that. I was prepared for that hate. You know, man, I took this lady's son. You know, that's no small thing.
Yeah.
But to get forgiveness, man.
It's real. You know, I'm sitting over here trying to hold back my tears so we can finish this so we can finish this interview. But it's just amazing how good God can be, even in the midst of a dumb decision at what we can do. You know, I join you in praying for her family as well. Praying for her son's son, who she's had to raise and can only imagine the questions that he may have had growing up. And I pray that if he's watching this, he learns more about you and your heart. And one day you'll have to have that conversation with your son of some of the foolish decisions that you did at a young age and why you're so involved in his life. And now that you're out, I really wanted to end the show with this. It's you're out. You served 27 years in prison. Unfortunately, you took someone else's life. And now you're married to an amazing woman.
Yes.
You have a beautiful son that's raising up. How hard was it to come out of 27 years of being told what to do, how to live, watching over your back? You made a statement earlier. You said, hey, I'm going to come out as a man, either in the box or walking out. But you came out as a man. I think a lot of us watching this right now will be a little emotional. I want to talk about something happy. I mean, you found a woman. You found a, you know what I'm saying? You found the love of your life. Tell us a little bit about this. How did y'all meet, bro? Because if I'm not mistaken, when I look at the math, you got out and you got married in the same year?
No, the following year. I got out in November the 30th, 2018.
Okay.
And April the following year, I got married.
Wow.
So it wasn't too much alone, And so this lady really found me. 3 years prior to me getting out, she was visiting me.
Ronnie, hold on, bro. Hold on, Ronnie.
Man,
hold
listen.
On, hold on.
Ain't nothing
we gotta
but
talk
God,
about this,
man.
Ronnie. How is it that you could be in prison and a woman come find you? I'm still single and I'm not in jail.
Hey, bro. Hey, nothing but God. I'm telling you, it's a series of miracles.
Well, hey, Ronnie, I love real... God too. I got my Bible right here, Ronnie. I'm still single, bro. Ronnie, how did you meet this amazing woman, bro? How did you meet her, bro? Like, how did she find you? What was it online? Was it on the app? Like, what was it, bro?
You gotta read the book, man. one of the most beautiful love stories ever told is in here. I'm telling you, only God. Don't tell me what God can do.
We're gonna get that book, Ronnie.
Man.
Y'all, the link of his book is going to be inside the show description because it's not just the love story that's in there, but it's also just the story, too, that honestly will impact everyone's life. Everyone's life. So we're going to put 27 Summers link in the show description. He's a part of an amazing publishing company who I just genuinely and truly love. They've taken good care of me. They're taking good care of him. But we're definitely going to get that. But, Ronnie, I just got to ask, though, man. How do people in prison meet people outside of prison? How is that even possible?
It's one thing, a place where we was exposed to in prison was what I told you about the Angola Rodeo.
Yeah.
So we can go out, and so you see a lot of people. And so actually a friend of mine had met her cousin, you know, and amazingly he had... His story amazing too. He was charged with first degree murder and got found guilty of first degree murder to him. But they get the death penalty and he's home now. He's married to a cousin. They got married while he was in prison.
Hold on, bro.
And so here,
this is your cousin. This is your homeboy.
This is my friend. It's my homeboy. His wife's cousin.
Hey man, I got one. I got a cousin for you.
Yeah, he hooked me up. So it's a beautiful story. But so for 3 years we just spent time getting to know one another. It built a beautiful foundation of friendship. We were just real good friends. And I think that's what a lot of relationships are missing. You know, it get kind of blurred and confused with sex and this and that, you know. And so I'm not able to do none of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All I can do is get to know someone.
Yeah.
And they get to know me.
Yeah.
And so that laid a beautiful foundation for our relationship. In April of next year, it'll make 5 years that we've been married. Oh, man, it's one of the best decisions I have ever made.
Yeah.
You know, I'm married way up. I'm way in over my head. You know, God, listen, God really blessed me. You know?
Yo, the way you smiling right now, like, bro, I don't understand, bro. I was a friend for 27 years. I got out and got me one quick. She was good.
Yeah. And so, man, she, when I discharged in November 30th, 2018, she was at the gate waiting on me.
No,
she was
bro.
At the front gate. I got videos of it and everything. Oh, man, amazing moment there. And, man, been doing great.
I'm happy for
you. She's one of them. Yeah.
For her to see the God in you while behind prison, I don't know how many sisters. Well, I don't want to be rude. I don't know too many ladies. I don't know if she's a sister or not. Mm-hmm. But I don't know too many ladies who will be like, yo, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to give you a shot. I'm going to give you a chance.
Right.
You know, because, I mean, I'm pretty sure a lot of thoughts are going through their head. But I'm loving it. So
And one of the things when I came home, wondering if how her family is going to receive.
Yes, that's what I was thinking too.
Listen, my in-laws, some of the best in-laws, never had any problem with me. Love me to death. It's just, I'm telling you, another miracle.
Man, listen. You
my
know,
greatest support team.
And one, I'm about to find me some love. I'm about to find me some love, man. You done made me feel better about my situation, man. If Ronnie can find some love, I'm
going
to
find me some
love.
Come on, man. Anybody could.
Man,
anybody could, man.
I'm about to find it, man. So what are you doing now, bro? What are you doing now? You're out of prison. You got a beautiful family. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I know that you're traveling around the world sharing your message, but how is it? Because, you know, one of the biggest problems that we see with people transitioning from inside the prison to outside, it's hard for them to secure jobs, to secure income. What are you doing to provide for your family now?
Yeah. Amazingly, man, I've been home 5 years, just made 5 years in November, and I have never been without a job. I have all, from the gate, from the day I left out the gate, I had a job and never been without work. Even through the pandemic when people was being laid off, I had, man, just amazing. I'm telling you, miracle after miracle. And, got a call in the middle of the pandemic. I was already working on a job, and from the former warden, who was over Angola, he calls me. He's now the commissioner over the Mississippi Departments of Corrections. He's over all the prisons in Mississippi, and he calls me to be the head chaplain at Mississippi State Penitentiary. And Parchment, I'm telling you, I couldn't make this stuff up. I'm telling you, this is a series of miracles. And so, Parchment is likened to Angola. It's 18,000 acres again. This is the penitentiary. And I'm like, man, here it is. I'm going back into prison. But believe me, I knew it was God because prior to that, I was just telling my wife, because I was at that time, I was working as the supervisor over the natural gas of the town of Simsport, which is a miracle how I got that job. So, and I was telling her, you know, I'm very grateful of the job, grateful, man, that I can help and provide for my family through this. I said, but God ain't called me to be the gas man.
Yeah.
I got a great desire to be in full-time ministry. The next week, I get the call from him.
Wow.
The next week.
Wow.
And so we made a decision, her and I, and we moved to Mississippi.
You moved your whole family to Mississippi?
Moved my whole family to Mississippi. And we stayed there for like 3.5 years, about 4 years. We just made a transition in April from there to Baton Rouge. Bought a home, bought my first home. Real, man, listen, man, I'm telling you. Real great neighborhood that I could raise my son in.
Yeah.
Where he'll never see the things that I saw.
Come on, man.
He would never go to prison.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, he'll never go to prison.
Yeah.
And so, so now I work for the Louisiana Parole Project.
Wow.
Now, when I discharged from prison, this program helped me to make a transition from prison to home.
Okay.
You know, and that's what we do. We provide wraparound services that help guys make a transition, especially guys who've been in prison at least 20 years, we help them make a transition because a lot has changed, you know. Cell phones, you know. We have tech classes, you know. We have scam classes because they're susceptible to scams now. You know, they don't know anything about that. And so many things we just help them with, man. Yeah. We help them get jobs. We make sure when they come home, they get all their benefits, you know, Medicaid, Medicare, what have you. Make sure they get licensed and just help them get a great start.
Yeah.
You know. And so we're a little bit over what? Just made it a little bit over 500 since we've been in operation since 2016, and we a little bit over 500 clients, and we have a less than 2% recidivism rate.
So that means that they go back into the prison?
Right, less than 2%.
Wow.
Recidivism. So that translates in layman's terms that if you come through our program from prison, you're more than likely never to return back in prison.
Wow.
Because they get great starts.
Yeah.
You know, we help them get everything they need. We give them houses when they come home. They get housing, clothing, food. They don't have to worry about anything for the first month that they're home.
Wow. Nothing at all.
Nothing. And so we take care of that. Just help them make a great transition. And it's awesome, man. That requires me, part of my job of going back into prison. I go back and I just was in Angola the other day and I interview guys for our program, you know. And seeing who's ready, you know. And so, and just giving back, man. Just helping them brothers, man.
No, man. Ronnie, I think that your story is amazing. And I think that we definitely can't go through everything that's in the book, 27 Summers. And so you guys, for those of you watching it right now, this is definitely a God story that I believe can happen for anybody. It's not just special to Ronnie. I believe if you believe in God.
That's right.
At the end of the day, God still got to get the glory out of your life, no matter where you are, no matter what you're going through. And a lot of us are saying, hey, you know, I've never been close to going to jail, but I may be going through hell. And no matter what hell you're going through right now, as we can see from Ronnie's story and journey of life, God can flip that thing around. You may have been going through hell. You may be drowning in debt right now. You may have lost your job. You may have lost your business. Your child may be going astray a little bit. At the end of the day, if you seek ye first the kingdom of God, if you put him the head of your life, God has to get the glory. Now, you may be thinking, it's been 10 years. He was in jail for 27. it's been going on for too long. Listen. It's not about our timing. It's about God's timing. And while we're through the process, how are we evolving? How are we growing? How are we maturing? And how are we still giving God the glory? And I don't want to preach too much because I'm going to preach at the end of it. But how do you really want to upset the devil? When you're going through hell, acknowledge the hell you're going through, but still give God the glory while you're going through hell.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That will upset the enemy, but it will activate the kingdom. And so even for me, my team don't even know some of the hell that I'd be going through because I still come down and I still give God the glory. I still push through. I still do my job. But that's upsetting the enemy because the enemy thought he had Ronnie. The enemy thought, oh, he going to die in jail. The enemy thought he was just going to be raped and just killed and destroyed in the prison. But God said, not my child. That's not right. My child.
So, Brother Anderson, look, let me interject this here, man. Yeah. Right now in my life, I enjoy, and I'm talking about every moment in my life, everyday moment, man. But that didn't start when I got out of prison. I was enjoying everyday life while I was in prison. So it doesn't make no difference of your geographical location or what your situation is. What makes the difference is him being in me, allowing him to work in me outward these things, you know, and having an inward peace and joy, you know, that's not circumstantial.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's an innate ability to withstand all that and trust God in the midst of it and let him walk you through all that. I'm telling you, man, I've had some of the best times with him in prison, in a cell. I'm talking about, look, I'll be in a one-man cell. I remember they put me in a cell for 18 months, 23 hours a day. You only get an hour outside the cell.
An hour outside the cell?
That's once a day. And I was there for 18 months. Now, why is this here? But why is this? There was another man in the cell. I'm telling you, the presence of God will fill that cell. And a lot of people thought I was losing my mind who was on that tier in other cells. You know, I go to clapping and just, man, I'm talking about really rejoicing and thanking God in the midst of that. Because he had come in there. I know I wasn't alone.
Yeah,
he was there with me. No matter where you at in your life, man, you're not alone.
Yeah.
He's there. He's waiting on you. He's waiting to embrace you, to love you, past where you are.
Yeah.
And, man, I can remember, man, he would give me prophetic glimpse of where I was going. I remember one time I got so happy, I was loud. I saw myself in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm in prison.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I got a life sentence.
Yeah.
But I saw myself in New York in about, what, probably about a week or two later, guess who ended up by my cell? Jim Cimbala from New York. He come visit me. Man, I'm telling you, man, I couldn't make this stuff up. And so, man, I learned to enjoy everyday life in the midst of all the turmoil.
Yeah.
Because once I found purpose.
Yeah.
You know? I found purpose in him, and I started helping people while I was in prison.
Yeah.
From where I was, you know. And this was during a time when there was absolutely no light at the end of the tunnel. But Brother Anthony, there was a light in the tunnel. There was a light in the tunnel, and that's what I embraced. I embraced that light, and he led me to the end of that tunnel. That's why I'm sitting here today. Don't tell me what God can't do, man.
Nah. After hearing your story, it personally convicted me. I'm just being honest. You know, I need to stop complaining. After hearing your story, we all go through things, but to see you this energetic, to see you this happy, to see you married, to see you have a child, to see you impacting lives, I am personally convicted because I've complained about things that you probably would have found joy in. We've all complained about things that probably Ronnie would have been like, man, y'all crazy. What? let me show you what you really should be complaining about. And man, I just want to say thank you for coming on the show today to inspire us, to inspire the world. We're going to get your book. I already have my copy of the book, but I want to encourage everyone to get your copy, to get your copy of this man's book. Michelle is in the room. We're going to make this a book of the month, the book of the month for February or March. We'll figure that out. But we want to make this the book that we read as an E3 community. And I just want to say thank you. So we're going to drop it in the show description. Yes, you guys, sir. Go support it. This man needs to become a New York Times bestselling author. Let's see what else. Let's help God get this story out because it's needed. And so, y'all, thank you so much, Ronnie, man.
Yes, sir.
And we're going to link all of Ronnie's information, his Instagram, so you can go see him and his beautiful family. We'll link his website and all information. Going to learn more about him. And to other podcasters who are watching and listening, hey, get him on your show. Let's expose this message to other platforms because, man, I knew it was going to be a good conversation, but I didn't know it was going to be this good and convicting. And so I am extremely grateful for you, Ronnie, and I wish we had more time on the show. Yeah. But you've blessed me tremendously, and I'm going to make sure I do my part to tell my friends about your story, to get you on other shows, to get you on other platforms. And, man, if I could ever come out to those prisons or to come out to your organization to talk to these young people, to teach them how to budget, personal finance, walk into those prisons and just be a light there, let me know. I'm coming. I'll fly myself to Mississippi. I'll fly myself to Baton Rouge, where you are right now. Man, I would love to meet you in person and partner with you to continue your message, man.
Definitely, man.
Appreciate you. Y'all, listen, go check him out. As you all know, it's been a great time. We'll see you on the next show. Peace out.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.